But if you just get on another hamster wheel, you haven't actually figured out the solution to the equation. And the equation is financial freedom. Like, the word freedom is in there. It's not just about finances. It's also about freeing yourself from some of those sort of perseverating mental things that keep you trapped.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Terry Schauer is an active investor, property manager, and author of the book Mindful Landlord. She invests in multifamily in Montreal, Canada, and co-hosts two podcasts, one on real estate and the other called Mindful Wealth. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask everyone who comes on the show. Can you briefly tell us, where did you start, where are you now, and how did you get there?
Okay, I'll try to do it as briefly as you asked it to me. So I started managing properties when I was 19 years old. I moved out of my parents' house and went away to college. And when I moved to Toronto, there was no space in student residence. So I ended up in like this crazy student house that was really poorly managed. And basically they voted me house manager like the day after I moved there. So I found myself like managing this Victorian mansion of like a bunch of college kids. And then it turned out I actually liked that so much that I decided that when I moved cities, I would set up the same thing. So like I rented another big house and decided, okay, I'm going to now do this for myself just because I like living in that kind of community. And it was a way to cut fees. So I guess basically like house hacking.
Right.
And then I moved back to Montreal after I'd finished studying and I went to see Dad and I said, Dad, I've been doing this now for about 5 years, like as a tenant. Would you lend me a down payment? And I had like an up and coming area kind of in view. Then we closed on the property and I set up that kind of a student community there. And then things kind of like grew from there. And it was such a good business model that I ended up kind of packaging it and selling it to other people. So yeah.
That's fantastic. So what was the aha moment or the thing where you said, man, like I'm onto something here?
Well, I think like for me, so I studied for a really long time. Like I was doing property management as a sideline to like an academic career. So I did a PhD and I basically finished my PhD when I was 30 and decided like, okay, I'm not going to be an academic. And then there was kind of this like crisis moment when I'm like, okay, really, I enjoy real estate more, but I've just invested 10 years into building a career as an academic, but that's just not where I see myself. And so then I kind of thought, okay, then what am I going to do to succeed in that area? Because I really didn't have training. I had experience on the ground, but I didn't have any formal training. So I decided to get a job in a property management company and then did that for a couple of years with the idea that I was going to one day start my own firm. So I kind of wanted to like get paid to see how to set myself up, clone what they did, and then haven't looked back since.
That's awesome. So what does business look like for you today?
Yeah. So actually, I also had another kind of a pivotal moment maybe 4 years ago where I realized like I'd really tried to scale the management business. I also have my broker's license and I tried to grow my brokering business. And I realized that like while I was having success from that work, it really wasn't giving me the kind of return that I wanted in my personal life. I also became a mom and realized that it's not all about more dollars and more doors and bigger is better. And that was kind of like my mindful landlord moment when I realized real estate is great, but it's also dangerous to get caught up in that kind of bigger is better mentality. And so then that turned into me writing the book and also just doing more joint venture deals, because I found that like what I was doing is more like the skills I built as a property manager, I was just able to get way more bang for my buck as an investor than managing properties for other people. So that's kind of been the latest rotation of the wheel kind of thing.
Right. So you were doing property management and then moved out of it and more into landlord and ownership versus property management. And do you still manage your own properties?
Yeah. I built like a management team basically in Montreal and we're quite effective. And in a sense, that's a bit of my secret sauce. I think most investors kind of have an angle. Like some of them are going to be very good at construction. Some of them are going to be really good at like creative financing. And it turned out that my secret sauce was the management aspect. And so rather than close the business, I decided I'm going to slowly get rid of some of my clients, like not aggressively take on new business. And I want those doors to be my doors or doors that I have joint ventures with, as opposed to be managing for other people. So I still do, like part of the portfolio is still owned by other people, but I'm not one out my building in, one out another building of mine in.
Right. That's interesting. Talk to us about the property management side of things. Let's spend a few minutes here and really, really focus in on that. Talk to us about some of the things that you see that people are doing right, some of the things you see people doing wrong, and how it is that you guys creatively solve some of the problems maybe that people find in managing their own properties.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that I observe in terms of, let's say, mistakes that I see people make a lot. So one is maybe not really understanding the legal side of things. And like us in, so I live in the French part of Canada, which is Quebec. And so we're probably closest to like a New York or California. Like everything here is rent controlled. And so we have a very strong tenant board. And so there's a lot of laws in terms of what you can and can't do. And I feel like there's also a lot of kind of talk that's actually not true. So I feel like a lot of landlords don't actually know what their rights are. They don't actually know what their obligations are. And so they will kind of make decisions that aren't based on legal best practices. So for example, like evictions here, everyone's like, oh, eviction is such a big deal. Rent non-payment, it's such a big deal. Well, actually it's not. If I have an issue I want to police, non-payment is the easiest issue to police versus like them having 12 dogs or growing pot on the property or something like that is all way more complicated. So I think one thing is to really understand the legal environment properly. And then the other thing is also just understanding that property ownership is a business. And when you make decisions, like it's very important to not make emotional decisions. So let's say I want to have this beautiful kitchen. I walk into a unit. I'm like, let me renovate this as a function of the fact that I would live there. Well, no, it has to be in line with whatever your client market is. So doesn't mean you can't make beautiful units if the market is willing to support that, but you really have to approach every decision as a business decision. So if I'm going to write this check, what's the ROI on that going to be? And to really just be super technical and scientific about it and not make emotional decisions. So
Yeah, that's a tough one. That sounds like something maybe that a newer landlord would probably run into more on the emotional decision or over renovating or things like that. Maybe more than someone experienced. The other part of that equation is landlords don't take care of their property.
Yeah. And maybe as people become more experienced and they get a bit caught up in the more dollars, more doors, is they neglect the very basic things that are going to just keep their investment ticking over. I mean, that's another aspect of emotional decision-making because in a sense, you're taking the short-term over the long-term stability of whatever you're trying to do. And so that kind of short-termism is also a question of myopic kind of analysis of what's going on.
Talk to us about the book you've got there, The Mindful Landlord. What's that about? And kind of give us some highlight on that.
Yeah. So I mentioned that when I became a mom, it kind of forced me to rethink what I was doing in my business life. And I think it's really my attempt to marry some of the maybe more holistic philosophical issues that I've faced as an investor with are really nuts and bolts. Like, okay, you want to get into the business, you need to do 1, 2, 3, 4. But while you're doing that, don't lose sight of the forest for the tree that's in front of you. Because I think that aspect, especially be it when you're starting, where like people face a lot of mental roadblocks in terms of fear or limiting beliefs that stop them from getting started. A lot of people talk about that. But then there's also this time when you actually start to see success. And I think that's a moment when a lot of more experienced investors really get caught up in this wheel of more doors and more dollars. And I kind of went down that road hard myself. And you're ultimately pitching at the beginning, you get into real estate to like quit your job and have a better quality of life. But if you just get on another hamster wheel, you haven't actually figured out the solution to the equation. And the equation is financial freedom. Like the word freedom is in there. It's not just about finances. It's also about freeing yourself from some of those sort of perseverating mental things that keep you trapped. So
I like that. I've never heard that financial freedom, that freedom is part of the equation. On that, you said you wanted to write about the holistic and philosophical things as it pertains to real estate. What does that mean?
So basically, like I'm talking about mentally, how you need to set yourself up to have a fulfilling life in addition to being an investor. So if that is, like I said, at the beginning, like a lot of the limiting beliefs happen to be things that keep people at whatever level of attainment that they have. So like you either believe you're too shy or you're too afraid to take risks. Like I think most of us have gotten over that initial hurdle. I think we all have to go through that process when you start investing. And then the other part is really like once you start succeeding, what do you do in the service of more? And why are we driven by more? And like, when I say philosophical, like then it gets into like a bit of a looking at our culture and the way in which like we're pushed to consumption, pushed to win the bank account Olympics, and to really look at that and evaluate what real joy is that bringing me in my everyday life. And if I'm going to go and buy myself like a $3-4 million house, what kind of pressure am I putting on myself to maintain that lifestyle versus I live in a fairly modest house in a modest neighborhood with some chickens in the backyard. That's a decision, a quality of life decision that you do in terms of how you want to run your stuff.
That ties right back in with the freedom idea where you're talking about financial freedom. What does that mean to you? Like at what point in time did you say, okay, now I've achieved the freedom I want, or is that a constant work in progress?
Well, I think one thing is handling the financial side of it. And what I like to say also is that basically I was able to cover my living expenses with 9 doors. Okay. I mean, I had a good business model and I think I got into the market at a good time in order for that to happen. But I want to dispel this myth that you need thousands of properties to be financially free, because the technical definition of financial freedom is when your income covers your living expenses. And so, yes, you can work on your passive income, but you can also work on living a lifestyle that's going to allow you to reach that goal earlier. So I think that's one thing. And then I think the other aspect is really to get aligned and understand like what it is that really brings you joy and happiness. And then how to do that also, one of the things that doesn't get talked about so much is how to do that in a way that's not socially destructive. Because again, I don't know exactly where you're investing, but in Montreal, there's a lot of optimizing, gentrifying, a lot of practices that are a little bit dodgy in terms of what landlords do. And housing is a very big issue in terms of cycles of poverty and all that other kind of stuff. And so when you do a gut check of what effect are my actions really having in the world, I don't think you can truly be at peace unless you are aware of the result of behaviors that you have. And then you go through this kind of an audit where you're like, okay, well, if everybody made this decision, what would the world look like? And that needs to be kind of a part of, if you want to set yourself up to have the financial stuff taken care of, but also peace of mind, you're not doing that in a vacuum. You're doing that in a community. You're doing that in a spiritual space, for lack of a better take on it.
Right. That's fantastic. I love that. Terry, can you talk to us a little bit about your podcast, Mindful Wealth, what it's about, and maybe how listeners can get in touch with you on that side?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have a website that's just mindfulwealth.com, but I think that's exactly what I was kind of outlining, that basically I got together with a financial planner from California, Jonathan Dio, and I think both of us were a little bit fed up with our industries. So he's like comes from more of the stock side. I come from real estate. And I think both of us were fed up with kind of the greed culture or the bigger is better culture of our respective industries. And then we kind of wanted to ask those difficult questions, which people on our side of the table tend to not ask so much. So what is the real key to happiness? Is it more money? Is there a time at which money tapers off and other things become more important? How do we pursue wealth in a socially responsible way? Because if it's an I win and you lose situation, ultimately you're not winning. When you're on your deathbed, you're not going to be thinking, oh, I had the biggest bank account and therefore I won the game of life. No, no, that's not what you're going to remember at the end. And so that podcast kind of gets into some of those issues. So,
oh, that's fun. I look forward to checking that out. Lastly, talk to us about the second edition of your book that's coming out here in February.
Yeah, I'm excited to be re-releasing that. I think I went back to the drawing board a little bit after having the COVID experience. I think that forced us to all pause a little bit and rethink some things. And then also just to go back and after having started the Mindful Wealth podcast, has been running for about a year. And some of the interviews that we did there really forced me to rethink some stuff. One of the great things about the way the world works now is you can just go in and choose, okay, well, I didn't like this. Let me re-edit it. Let me put out the new improved version of it. So that ended up being the decision to release that in the beginning of February to include some of that new information that I think is going to be interesting for people.
That's fantastic. I've loved this. This has been a great interview. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show today. Let's jump here into the final four questions. What is one resource that you can't live without?
My e-reader. I'm on there all the time.
E-reader?
Yeah, Kindle.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I hadn't heard it called that before. Maybe I'm behind the times, which I'm sure I am. Fantastic, an e-reader. I love that. Question number two, if you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Well, I think I'll pick two and it would be the ones that I said before. So one of them would be, if you haven't got started, just do it. You're better to take action and make mistakes than not take action. And the other one is to people who are a bit further along the line is when you find yourself on a little hamster wheel, think about the hamster wheel. don't just run after bigger is better, because that's not ultimately the key to happiness.
Right. Love that. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Well, I think the book and the podcast are sort of my attempt to bring some reflective ideas to have people who are in financial services or real estate really contemplate what the effects are of their decisions.
Love it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
So social media, you just got my name at the bottom of the screen. So you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and then obviously mindfullandlord.com or terryshower.com are my websites.
Fantastic. And for those of you who aren't watching this and are listening, it's Terry, T-E-R-R-I-E, Shower, S-C-H-A-U-E-R. And that was terryshower.com, correct?
Yep.
Fantastic. Terry, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.